There we go. All right, you're on.
Hi, I'm Ellen, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Ellen.
Thank you. Ditto with the, you know, it's both for me. My life is totally unmanageable when I'm eating. And I have in the past used food, you know, as what I thought was a solution. And I think, you know, most people know, and I certainly know, that it's not a solution, but it's an escape mechanism. You know, it doesn't make the problem better, it makes it 10 times worse, because not only do I have the original problem now, but I have the problem that I'm in the food. I know that on an intellectual level, yet when stressed, I used to still turn back to the food, which is something that I'm working on changing by working the program. I'd like to say that I came to the program 20-something years ago and was struck abstinent. That wasn't my story. But I know there's no other way for me. I need to be abstinent. By my definition of abstinence, with for me, is I have to weigh and measure my food. You know, here I don't, because I'm eating abstinently, but or if I'm out. But when I'm home, my portions creep, you know, on a day-to-day basis. I just, you know, I know how that works for me. And I don't like to be a person with discipline, but discipline works for me. So I may not like it, but it works. So I have to understand, like, why do I balk against that when reality shows that it works? I grew up with an alcoholic mother and a dad who was extremely heavy. I'm sure neither of them had coping mechanisms. My dad left unexpectedly when I was about 8, so they got divorced back in the 60s when nobody did. And then when I was older, I went to counseling for a while, and the woman said to me, "You have real abandonment issues." And I said, "Well, my dad left." She goes, "No, your mom." I said, "What are you talking about?" The fact that she was an alcoholic, she was so absorbed in the alcohol. So it was interesting that I never really even thought about that. You know, that at 9 years old, I found us an apartment. And at, you know, 11, I would be getting her to get up for work because she needed, you know, like it never even occurred to me I felt like I was loved and I had a good childhood. But again, that's not an excuse to turn to food. It's a reason why maybe I became who I am, but that's okay, you know. Now I have a pain of watching my son use other things to relieve stress. So, you know, it's interesting. He just texted me yesterday, "I think maybe I need to go back to the counselor." And you know what? We really can't afford it. And my response was, whatever the medical doesn't pay, we'll pay. Don't worry about it. Make an appointment. So I tried, as my kids were younger, not to let them see me eating because I didn't want them to develop that. But I was 260 pounds and 5'4¾". I'm thinking they saw it. You know, like maybe they didn't see the physical action, but they saw the symptom. You know, they saw the result. So for today, I don't turn to food to deal with the stress. I'm turning to the program. And I'm here this weekend because you heard me last night say I won the weekend, so I was thrilled. I was so excited. But, you know, I keep knowing that if I work the program hard enough, there will be the miracle because it's happened before in my life. So for today, I'm here working it, and that's the miracle, that I'm not sitting home under the covers or somewhere else hiding food and just making myself, quote, feel better in order to feel so much worse later. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Donna, grateful compulsive overeater.
Hi, Donna.
I agree with this. I thought, why, and I'm thinking to myself now, sitting here, listening to all the sharing, why did I think it would solve my problems? I think I was raised that way because I had a mother who was a compulsive overeater. My father is like, he still is to this day the voice of reasoning. But I think I was brought up that way to use it as a coping mechanism. And I didn't really start, I was chubby as a kid, but I think my disease really kicked in when I was a teenager. I was home by myself with my two sisters and the food was there. I was never a person who stole food or hid food because my mother was out working. I had access to the food, as much of it as I wanted. So, you know, at that time, at that age, quirky problems, whatever, typical preteens, adolescents go through, that was my way of coping with it. And recently I remember times getting booze. You know, well, my parents aren't here, but they got stocked wine, beer, you name it. Unfortunately, that didn't take. The booze never took, but the food took. And, you know, the older I got, the more problems I got, it was easy for me to cope by getting into the food. And, you know, all I thought at times was, I just need a diet, I lose weight, all my problems will go away, and life will be great. And there were times when, you know, as loving as my mother would try to be, she would say, you know, if you lose weight, you'll have this, you'll be this way, and that was not true. But, you know, I'm a compulsive overeater, and there are certain foods I can't handle. I have to admit every day, and I do talk to my higher power every day, that I can't handle this. I have no control over those certain foods, and I have no control over food. And back to the question was, how can you not, you know, how can you be absent and not think of food? Yeah, I think of food. And, you know, the compulsive overeater, my disease is, you know, always in the back of my head. It's at the gym with me doing push-ups in the next room. And for me, you know, I've taken the scenic route, so it's gotten worse, you know. There were years where it was just really bad. And what, you know, I used to remember people saying, well, now that you live on your own, it should be easy. But I have to tell you, it's not easy. Because one of my things was, ooh, I'm by myself and I have all the food I want. Nobody there to bother me. Because one of the things was, when I was at home, my mother would bother me about it, because I think it was trying her way of trying to be a loving parent and saying, I don't want you to be like me, overweight, and, you know, wasn't helping. And I had other people outside my family trying to be that quote-unquote helpful, but I just wanted to beat the hell out of them. It didn't help me. Didn't, you know, and I, being a compulsive overeater, I also have a compassion for people who are still out there struggling. And I'm glad we pray for those people, because they don't know any other way. And maybe I pray sometimes, you know, maybe they'll find a way when it's their time, because, you know, they're sick. And it did make my food has made my life unmanageable. I missed out on a lot because of food. I was a typical teenager who had the body image issues, and I don't have them as much. The older I get, it's like I'm very comfortable in my skin. But back in the day, it was like, if you weren't like this, you know, you were useless. And eating did not solve my problems. Today, what I do is I talk to my higher power, and throughout the day, if something comes up, whether it's work-related or personal or whatever, I just talk to my higher power. I also do a lot of, you know, when I really, I try to do a lot of, you know, just a writing and just write, and it's gibberish, but I try to get my writing in. I make my hello calls, and now lately I've been going to a step meeting, because now I need to really get into the steps. I've done those three, the Westminster writing, which are the first three steps, but I really want to delve into the steps, and the meeting that I'm going to on this Thursday, which I'm making a point to go to, is going to deal with step one. And that's the first one I got to remember, is that I'm powerless over food. It also goes into other parts of my life where I'm powerless over people, places, and situations. So for me, then I have to go and I do this third step prayer every day, because I have no control over anything. And, you know, I really try to seek the guidance of what my higher power wants me to do, whether it's school, whether it's men, whether it's family, work, whatever, you know. I just turn it up to my higher power, because as I've also been in this program learning that my higher power gives me things that, oh my God, it's 100 times better than what I've ever planned. And I got to remember that. And that's also hard for me, because I never realized, wait a minute, this is damn good. What are you complaining about? And I mean, I hope my higher power, you know, hopefully my higher power takes care of me. Sometimes my higher power also gives me a good swift kick in the ass when I need it. But I just have today, and today I'm grateful to be here, and I'm enjoying the scenery and the nice weather, and it's great. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Hi, I'm Dee.
Hi,
Dee. I am a compulsive overeater. Nobody gets through childhood unscathed. Nobody. Whether, you know, I listen to all your stories. I, on the outside, had probably the most normal childhood. Large family, only child of a very large family, 41 first cousins, typical Italian family. I was the third oldest of all the cousins, and it seemed everybody looked to me to lead the way. You know, I was I was the example. I had to be the perfect child because, after all, you know, that reflected back on my mother. I am a child living in a 67-year-old body. So I'm trying to grow up and put things in perspective. My childhood was, my mother and father absolutely adored each other. That kind of love you will never see in a million years. My father's been dead 20 years. My mother mourns him every single day, every day. I tried as a child to get some of that love, and I never felt it. When you talk to my mother, I had a charm to life. She said I was loved. I didn't feel it because I always felt that I was in the way. She doesn't remember this, but she used to say to me, it's embedded in my mind, your father and I had 7 wonderful years together. And I couldn't figure that out, but as a child, I thought that was the 7 years they didn't have me. And I never thought to ask. So I just grew up thinking that I ruined her life. What were you supposed to think as a child? So, being in this large Italian family, food was love. Food was absolutely love. Grandma made everything homemade, and you went there, and it was just lavished on you. If you didn't eat, there was something wrong. What did they do wrong? And the interesting dynamics in the family is my mother had 6 sisters. They were the thin ones and the fat ones. My mother was one of the fat ones. The thin sisters were always berating the fat sisters. My mother, like I've heard here, didn't want me to grow up to be one of the fat ones, so that it was a constant battle. The food was always given, but I was expected to be able to push the table away, get up and have that one thing. I was expected to be able to control my eating, but I couldn't because it was emotional. All my eating is emotional. Whether I'm bored, whether I'm happy, whether I'm sad, it doesn't matter. So I grew up, and at 21, I heard an aunt say, I came home from college. I didn't have a boyfriend when I came home from college. I was 21 years old. And I heard an aunt say, oh, she'll probably be an old maid, and she'll stay home and take care of you. So I met a man in an accident, and I married him in 6 months. That'll show you. That'll show you. Got pregnant on my honeymoon, had my first boy. Then when he was 6 months, I got pregnant again. I was leaving my husband. This was the funny part. I was leaving him after my child was born because I married my mother, and I didn't realize it. And he was 11 years older. A narcissist, very controlling, and I could never do anything to quite please him. I could cook, but it wasn't enough. I could do something, but it wasn't enough. I couldn't keep the house clean enough and everything. And then we reconciled, and I had Michael. So I stayed in the marriage 30 years, and every year it diminished me a little bit more. And I turned 50. And I was over 300 pounds. And he kept saying all during our marriage, I eat to live, not live to eat, and I hated him. I hated him for that because I couldn't control it. Every holiday, I cooked too much. You know, it just was a constant battle. And the more he berated me and the heavier I got, the more I ate. I couldn't stop. And finally, I went to a priest, and the priest said, God never intended you to live your life this unhappy. You're not fulfilling the purpose, your life's purpose. So I divorced him. And I blessed that priest every day. Am I fulfilled? I feel better now than I've ever felt in my life. I joined OA when I was at the bottom. I couldn't walk. I'm probably going to die pretty soon. And I grasped the program immediately. I lost quite a bit of weight. I got my 90-day medal. I got it all. And then I thought I was cured because, you know, I weighed and measured. I did everything. I had my sponsors. I did everything. And then somebody came up to me and said to me, God, you know, you're disappearing. You look so thin. Well, when somebody doesn't feel like they have a place in the world, telling somebody they're disappearing is probably the last thing on earth. So one of the things I have to say is be careful how you use your words with somebody that's suffering from this disease, because it sticks in our minds, and that's part of our disease. The slightest comment can send you into a spin. It wasn't meant to be vicious. It was a comment. But it hit me that if I get small, I'm not going to have any power. I'm going to be powerless, because what happened to me after the divorce, I had a terrific job. I didn't take alimony. I didn't want anything to do with them. And then I lost my job. They call it a pension, but it's not. It's age discrimination, whether you want to, you know, they eliminate jobs of older employees. And I worked in a hospital. So I lived on my own for 5 years, and I loved it. And then my mother got sick, and she just got really sick, and I was spending all my time running back and forth, doing her shopping, doing her cleaning, doing everything. And then an uncle of mine said, well, why don't I just build you an apartment? So now I'm living with my mother, which is a challenge, because I am still the child. I'm still her child. And every day she'll tell me, you know, why don't you lose weight? Why don't you lose weight? Look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. Well, you know, maybe she is putting up a mirror, but that emotion is making me eat. So I'm back in program. I'm going to be positive about it this time. I'm not going to, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do this time. And I think it's going to work because of the support. And I'm going to stay in the rooms. I've never left the rooms in 3 years, even though I haven't really stayed in the program. I've never left the rooms. And so that's the key for me, is the fellowship. This weekend is a blessing. So thank you for all being here and supporting me.
Hi, I'm Dolores, a compulsive overeater. Wait a minute, where are we? Throw him out. I'm gonna beat him up.
Better get out of the middle here.
You know what? Thank God for this program and for a sense of humor, because that's what it's all about. I mean, it's listen, I went through a good part of my life blaming whoever because I was 10, 15, 20 pounds, whatever it was somebody else's fault. It wasn't mine. And the real reality of my disease is I don't look at food the same way the normies do, whatever. You know, and I've stopped analyzing it. Did I come out of the womb that way? And every story I've heard is my story. I too was a latchkey kid. I still don't like coming home to an empty house. I leave the TV on, I leave the radio on, I have a dog. But is that all bad? That's just something that I do. But also, you know what? Food is good. It's and I have to eat to keep my body to what it's supposed to be. I've shared this story before, but my first child was a colicky baby. We were living with my in-laws, who were lovely, lovely people, and I was so lucky to have them in my life. But no house is big enough for two women. It just, forget it. It just isn't. But anyway, this colicky baby would get up, of course, in the middle of the night. And that time, Johnny Carson was on. And, you know, Johnny Carson was built like this, you know, and Ed McMahon, and I think I'm Ed McMahon, because Johnny Carson would go out to some posh restaurant, and Ed McMahon would want to know, well, who did you see? Who was there? How was the food fixed? And Johnny Carson would say, I don't know. I ate. I talked to my wife. We went out. It didn't matter to him what he ate to live, where Ed McMahon, whatever that saying, the opposite. And that's how I was. Food has always been very important to me. But there's always a but. I wasn't a fat baby. I wasn't a fat, I was not, I didn't grow up being, a compulsive eater, but it didn't show on me physically until after the birth of my kids. And I had three kids in 3 years. And the whole thing was, well, why should I lose more weight? I'm pregnant again. You know, just all of that. And then it just, well, guess what? The kids grew up. They got on with their lives. And, you know, my baby's going to be 50 next month, and I'm still blaming him for the baby fat, you know, being facetious about it. But I have to tell you, my program is the most important thing in my life. I eat three meals a day, nothing in between. That was the real killer for me, is giving up that in between. You know, if I didn't eat breakfast, well, I can have more at lunch. If I didn't eat lunch, I can have more at dinner. If I didn't eat dinner, I could just go on and on. And I went through that all or nothing at all. You know, I didn't do well on starvation diets, though. I didn't last very long. But food is, I have to put it in the right order of my life. I'm the lady who lunches. I love to go out to lunch. And we're having a financial crisis, and I get an allowance, and that's where my allowance goes, is to my lunches. But that's a decision that I've made. That's what I want to do. But I still like to cook. I like to have company. I enjoy food. I don't think this program has said to me not to enjoy what I eat. I don't eat anything I don't like anymore. We just had a big discussion at breakfast about stuff that swims in the water. I hate it. I cannot tell you I hate it. The only one I eat is the one that comes in the little can. You know, but is that okay? That's okay, you know? And when I'm at home, being at home, it's a little, I'm not working now, so I have more time at home. And you'd think having more time at home, my house would be like Martha Stewart. Well, forget that, you know? I always find something else to do. What do I want to say to you? I guess when I came into the rooms, I've been in a while. I've been in 20 years, and I've been abstinent that whole time. And it was just something that I decided when I walked in. I went to that first meeting in Parsippany. There were 50 people there. They were sitting all over the place. And I sat there for 2 hours, and I knew I was at the right place at the right time in my life. And I picked this program to be a way of life for me. And I like what was said earlier, that food is not the issue anymore. The food is, it for me, it's in the proper place. But I also think it's interesting in my case, when a monkey wrench is thrown in to my life, there's still a part of me, gee, if I had that favorite thing, would this go away? But I don't give in to it, because I know that I have to tell you something that happened to me just this week. I'm a walker. And I'm going to digress for a minute. And 10 years ago, I walked the 60-mile walk with somebody else in the program. And took us 3 days to walk 60 miles, And you don't get up just one day and say, I'm going to walk 60 miles. I lost my job in February, and the walk was in October. So I went into training, you know, walking. I worked with the nutrition. I did all of those things that prepared me to do this walk. And it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. I'm going to do it again, but I did it. You know, and every time we go into New York and we go across the George Washington Bridge, I walked across that bridge. I was one of those, it still gives me goose pimples. I have a sister-in-law who we lost to breast cancer. All of that, you know. I'm digressing, but I forget what I'm going to say. Oh, but I want to tell you that, what happened to me this week? I'm out walking. And I walk around a golf course. It's beautiful. The lawns are lovely. Nobody's played golf yet. And I bought a new pair of sneakers, those new Skechers or Skeeters or whatever they're called. And I look up and I see two geese are just, where did they come from? The golf course works their heads off to keep those geese. They hire the dogs that chase them away and all. And I said, where did they come from? And I'm walking along, and I step over my own feet, and down I go. My elbows all banged up, my knees all banged up. I knocked off my glasses, I bumped my head, and as I'm going down and my glasses are coming off, I said, oh, please, dear God, don't let the lens break, because that's another $300. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And there's a car saw me go down, because they were behind me, two young guys, you know, and they said, oh, are you all right? And my ego, I couldn't get up. I could not get up, and my ego was, I'm fine, I'll be all right. You go on, I don't want you to be late for work, because I walk early in the morning. But it took me about 5 or 10 minutes. There was nothing to hang up onto, and I couldn't get up. And there was a part of me that I hurt. Physically, I hurt. But there was another part of me, I wanted somebody to know that I fell and I hurt. And my husband works in the city. I called John. What's he gonna do? He's, you know, and he's all at meetings, so he didn't even take the call. So I decided to call my sponsor, who I'd already talked to, given my food. And it's so interesting. I love this. She said to me, she's sympathetic, and then she said, is anything broken? I said, no, I'm, blah, 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 you know, and she said, all right, get up and go home. And that's, I need that a lot of times in what's ever going on in my life, that whining, that we had that session last night, that whining, that, and I have a new thing in my life. I can tell you the story 3 times, and after that, it's over. Are you going to hold that sign up?
I didn't have to, you know.
I'm getting better. You give me credit for that. The end.
Okay, good.
The end.
Thank you for sharing.
You want to be recorded?
Sure.
It's fine.
Sure,
okay.
How do I follow that?
Oh.
I'm Beth Ann. I'm sorry, I forgot my name this morning. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Beth Ann.
Grateful, recovering compulsive overeater. It's so interesting to me, and I so appreciate hearing everybody's stories. And I especially like hearing that other people feel like they're a child inside a adult body, you know, because the more that I work my abstinence, the more I see that I used food to cope with every feeling, and I have so handicapped myself when it comes to coping with feelings. Like I loved hearing that last night in here, that my coper is broken. I was like, yeah, that's it. My coper is broken. But it's interesting to me because I hear people tell different kinds of stories, and yet we all kind of came to the same conclusion that, you know, I need to overeat and it's somebody else's fault. It's my mother's fault or my father's fault. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, and I wish she had worked. She would have been much better off if she had worked. And she used to buy, you know, sugar items, and she would buy the individually wrapped, you know, big bag of individually wrapped sugar items, and but she wouldn't give them to us. And I don't know if she was being selfish or she was really trying to protect our teeth or whatever the situation was, but she would hide them or she would think they were hidden, and I would find them and steal them. And that's like one of my earliest memories of food, is finding these things and then having to hide all the little wrappers. And I have two younger sisters, and then when we were a little bit older and our parents would leave us alone in the house, they had another refrigerator in the cellar that had a padlock on it. And they would hide the key. They would think that they hid the key. Now, whether they really thought they hid the key, I don't know. But the key would always be somewhere fairly reasonably close and convenient. And so when the car would pull out of the driveway, we would all go running downstairs and we would find the key and we would open up the fridge and we would have whatever we thought we could get away with of whatever was already open in there. And we didn't have a lot of money, but I think it was more that my parents had kind of a poverty mindset. You know, they were from families of alcoholics and depression and stuff. So my mother would grocery shop, and she would bring maybe one box of a small treat. And if you didn't dive on that thing when it came in the house, it was not going to be there, you know. So I learned, like, I think that was where I first started to feel like, you know, as soon as I see something, boy, I've got to have it, and I've got to have it now because it's going to disappear. You know, they're going to stop making those, you know, which of course, you know, and I can relate to, you know, walking to school and stopping at the, you know, newsstand convenience store and getting the comics or the little magazines and the confections, you know, to go with them, and the cards that you would collect with the sugar goo in the packet and stuff like that. So it's interesting that, you know, I still came to the same conclusion that it's obviously my mother's fault that I'm a compulsive overeater. And, you know, after a while, the idea that of this being a cunning and baffling disease, for me, like when things are going well in my life, I felt like I had a certain amount of control and my weight would be pretty stable. Maybe I'd even lose a little weight and so forth. So I thought, well, you know, I'm not a compulsive overeater. I just, you know. But then when things would go wrong, you know, if there was a big disappointment or work issue or whatever, that's when I would lose control. And I would gain so much that, you know, then I would be struggling when whatever it was finally settled down, I'd be struggling to try and get back to where I was, until finally I went to program years ago, I don't know, 20 years ago, and it didn't quite, you know, even though when I walked in, when I first came in the rooms, I knew emotionally that I was with my tribe. You know, I couldn't quite grasp the program, unfortunately. So I kind of wandered off, and came back about 3 years ago, and now I find it's, you know, it's such a miracle, the changes when I put down the food. And that in between one meal to the next, like I said, I really hadn't realized how much I was just, food thoughts were just overwhelming my life. You know, even at work, it's like, well, you know, this person has a dish of this on her desk. If I go and I take one, well, would anybody, if nobody notices, maybe I can take two. Maybe can I go back? Has it been long enough? Is anybody going to notice? If I go back, I'll have some more. You know, so just that space in between one meal and the next, I found, like, you know, such a miracle to be aware of. And it's been challenging to be aware of my feelings and, you know, scary. But I find it's amazing to me, too, that I could feel something, you know, sad, upset, whatever, and it passes. I didn't know that, you know. I thought it would just stay forever, or I would plunge into some kind of really like pit of despair, you know, not realizing that the, you know, the huge amounts of compulsive overeating I was doing was more driving me more into a pit of despair than any feelings that I was having. So it's wonderful to me now, and I'm so grateful for the benefits of this program emotionally. I shared last night or whatever, that I used to have this negative voice in my head that would start in on me from the moment that I woke up in the morning. You should get up and go to work. I don't want to. I want to sleep another 5 minutes. You should get up. No, you know, like, oh, thank you. And it's not there all the time anymore. And I'm very, very grateful. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Sharon.
There you go, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Speak into the mic.
Thank you, ma'am. Hi, I'm Jack, a grief compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jack.
Thank you. Yeah, I looked at this topic, and I looked at the topic in the other room, and I decided to come into this one, because this is one that I felt I was being drawn to. The topic is, my life unmanageable because I eat. My life is unmanageable because I eat. Eating is a result of the unmanageability of my life. The eating is the solution to the unmanageability in my life. So I was a little twixt on that. Or have I used eating as my solution? That is my solution. So to me, it's really saying the same thing. I came into OA about 4 years ago now. And it took me probably about 3.5 years till I finally understood the program and how to work it. I learned about the tools in OA. But I started going to another meeting, a meeting it's not an AA meeting. It's a meeting up in Booton in St. Clair's on Wednesday nights. It's called the Stones Meeting. It's sober together on nothing except steps. But anybody that's in a 12-step program's work is welcome at this particular meeting. And they talk about how the program is the solution, not the substance to being the solution. So it doesn't matter to them whether you're using alcohol, drugs, food, whatever your addiction is, whatever your compulsion is, that's the solution to the problem. The problem is internal. And I learned I can't fix something inside of me with something external. So no matter what I try to do on the outside, it's not going to fix what's going on the inside. Okay? And that's because I have a spiritual malady. I have to be able to fix my spirit with spirit. That's the only way it's going to work. And I finally learned to turn everything that's going on in my life over to my higher power. It took me a long time to really accept it, because I've never been very religious. I was raised Jewish, but I always kind of shunned religion. It's funny, when I was growing up and celebrate Yom Kippur on the Day of Atonement, and I was told as a kid, you know, on Yom Kippur, the God puts your name in a book of life or a book of death. And I said, how does he know what I'm doing? What's this book? You know, I could never understand that. So I kind of lost touch with God and everything, but it only recently have contact with my higher power, and it's made a tremendous difference in my life. The food is not that important to me. I don't run to the food when I have an issue. There's a lot of things going on in life, like everybody. You know, things happen. You know, you have to deal with things that come up in life. But I don't run to the food. Now I turn to my higher power. What's going on, God? What do you want me to do? Why is this happening to me? And if I can't figure it out, I'll just say, you know, I'll sit back and say, show me what you want me to do next. And I've heard this over and over from people in the program, but it never sunk in until recently. And I guess it was my time to really start accepting that. So food is no longer my solution. My higher power is my solution now. And I keep hearing that abstinence is the most important thing to my life, without exception. But without my higher power, I can't remain abstinent. So to me, my higher power is the most important thing in my life, who helps me maintain my abstinence. Mm. So, thank you for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Would you like to share?
So the timing's worked out very well. I want to just add one thing. You know, what is the solution as we are using it as a coping mechanism? But I think for me, a time came when food solved absolutely nothing. It only made problems worse. And I remember working the night shift, I'm a nurse, at a hospital, and there was some terrible food left by a patient who went into surgery. So they put the tray in the refrigerator. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I was not at all hungry. The food was dreadful. The two things that the item came covered by was curled up at the edges, and I sat there and ate it anyway. And I didn't feel anxious or anything. I just ate it because it was there, like Mount Everest, you know? So I'm listening to these tapes these days, and the Joe and Charlie Big Book thing. You can go online and download them to your iPod, which is great because I walk and I listen to this wonderful program, Wisdom. And at one point, one of these old guys, Charlie, talks about the promises. And he says, food did make me forget about the past. Well, he's talking alcohol. Alcohol did make him forget about the past. Alcohol did help him get through the present. You know, all the things that the promises talk about in our book. But then what? You know, how long does it last? And then it becomes the biggest problem of all. So, yeah, you can call it a solution of sorts. But the fact is that the real solution is to follow the steps in the Big Book precisely as it's written, because that's where people get their recovery. So, on that note, let's join together with a closing prayer. And I guess we turn off the tape at this point, Dolores? Do we?
Yes.